Welcome to Tales from the Library, a Sanctuary First book club. Seneca, Letters from a Stoic. Lucius Annaeus Seneca, statesman, philosopher, advocate and man of letters, was born in Cordoba in Spain around 4 BC. Despite his relatively undistinguished background and ever-recurrent ill health, he rose rapidly to prominence at Rome, pursuing the double career in courts and political life for which he had been trained. He began also quickly to acquire celebrity as an author of tragedies and polished essays, moral and literary and scientific. Sentenced to death by successive emperors, he spent 8 years in exile on the island of Corsica, allegedly for an affair with Caligula's sister. Recalled in AD 49, he was made praetor, and was appointed tutor to the boy who was to become, in AD 54, the emperor, Nero. In AD 59, Nero had his mother put to death. The murder being carried out in cold blood after the calamitous failure of an attempt to stage an accident at sea. There is no reason to believe that Seneca and Burrus had no knowledge of or part in the planning of this crime. But as the facts became known, did their best to lessen its impact on public opinion. Seneca certainly drafted the letter to the Senate explaining how her death was the result of the exposure of a dangerous plot of hers against the emperor's life. Dio would have us believe that Seneca averted a general massacre by saying to Nero, "However many people you slaughter, you cannot kill your successor." Tacitus tells us that the death, probably murder, of Burrus in AD 62 broke Seneca's power. Enemies gained the ear of Nero with tales of Seneca's popularity and growing wealth. The first was represented as being dangerous to the throne, the second as overshadowing the possessions of the emperor himself, whose abilities as an artist and a speaker were also, it was said, being disparaged by his old instructor. Nero, they said, was now grown up and it was time for him to shake off his tutor. Seneca, warned of this by friends, realised his danger and decided to ask the emperor for permission to retire from public life. The request was eventually granted, and the parting was made amicable. Stoicism, for centuries the most influential philosophy in Greco-Roman world, had a long history before Seneca. Founded by Zeno, who had taught or lectured in a well-known Stoa, hence the name, in Athens, it has been developed and modified by a succession of thinkers whose opinions on various logical, ethical, or cosmological questions showed some fair divergences. As a moral creed, however, it was based throughout on the following framework of belief. The Stoics saw the world as a single great community in which all men are brothers, ruled by a supreme providence, which could be spoken of almost according to the choice or context under a variety of names or descriptions, including the divine reason, creative reason, nature, the spirit or purpose of the universe, destiny or a personal god, even by way of inclusion to traditional religions, the gods. It is man's duty to live in conformity with the divine will, and this means firstly bringing his life into line with nature's laws, and secondly resigning himself completely and uncomplainingly to whatever fate may send him. Only by living thus and not setting too high a value on things which can at any moment be taken away from him, can he discover that true, unshakable peace and contentment to which an ambition, luxury and above all avarice are among the greatest obstacles. Living in accordance with nature means not only questioning convention and training others to do without all except the necessities, plain food, water, basic clothing and shelter, but developing the inborn gift of reason, which marks us off as different from the animal world. We are meant to set free or perfect this rational element, this particle of universal reason, the divine spark in our human makeup, so that it may campaign against and conquer pain, grief, superstition, and the fear of death. It will show us that there's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Discipline the pleasures and the passions, and generally subordinate the body and emotions to the mind and soul. In this way, we shall arrive at the true end of man, happiness, through having attained the one and only good thing in life, the ideal or goal called arete in Greek and in Latin, virtus, for which the English word virtue is so unsatisfactory a translation. This, the sunum bonum, or supreme ideal, is usually summarized in ancient philosophy as a combination of four qualities: wisdom, or moral insight, courage, self-control, and justice, or upright dealing. It enables a man to be self-sufficient, immune to suffering, superior to the wounds and upsets of life, often personalized as Fortuna, the goddess of fortune. Even a slave thus armed can be called free, or titled king, since even a king cannot touch him. Another example of these paradoxes of which the Stoics were celebrated is one directed at the vanity of the worldly possessions. The shortest route to wealth is the contempt of wealth. Despite its wide acceptance in educated circles, early Stoicism had a forbidding aspect, which went far to explain its failure to influence the masses. There was something unreal or fictional about the sapiens, the wise man, or the philosopher. The ideal figure seemed, from the way the Stoic lecturers talked, to have somehow become perfect in some sudden transformation long ago. Gradual self-improvement was hardly discussed. The target it set seemed too high for ordinary men. It stifled and repressed ordinary human emotions in surviving for apatheia, immunity to feelings. Cato, the great Stoic saint, is reported to have expressed regret at having kissed his wife in a moment of danger. It held that certain circumstances of a man's self-respect might invite, as an act of supreme nobility, his suicide. In pursuing the ideal of autarkia, self-sufficiency, it seemed to make the perfect man a person detached and aloof from his fellows, superior to the world he lived in. Altogether, the impression it conveyed, for all its idealism and sincerity, could be cold, dogmatic, and unrealistic. Seneca's contribution to ancient philosophy lay in the humanization of this creed, continuing a process begun long before in Rhodes and Rome by Panaetius and Posidonius. Although Seneca wrote for a relatively narrow circle of educated persons, usually addressing his compositions to a particular friend or relative as if he were that person's special spiritual advisor, his letters and essays show Stoicism more closely reconciled with the facts and fealty of human nature. The idea of apatheia much modified, self-sufficient though he is, the sapiens can now have friends, can now grieve, within limits and at the loss of one. It has become his duty to be kind and forgiving towards others, indeed to live for the other person. In this way, living, he should avoid to be ostentatiously different from those he tries to win over from moral ignorance. He has to battle, like the rest, against his failings in a long and painful progress towards perfection, in which all can do with help from above or inspiration of others' example. Seneca himself, we observe, occasionally makes immodest statements concerning his own progress, but it is capable of humility, and in one description of himself as a long way from being tolerable, let alone a perfect human being. In statements of man's kinship with a beneficent or even loving God, and of a belief in conscience and the divinity-inspired inner light of the spirit, his attitudes are religious beyond anything in Roman state religion. In his day, little more than a withered survival of formal worship paid to a host of ancient gods and goddesses. Christian writers have not been slow to recognize the remarkably close parallels between isolated sentences in Seneca's writings and verses of the Bible. On the other hand, the word God, or the gods, was used by the philosophers more as a time-honored and convenient expression. To him, as most Stoics, virtue was to be looked upon as its own reward, and vice as its own punishment. Whether or not his letters may still be turned to, for their pointers to the contented life, they cannot be read without noticing how far in advance of their time are many of his ideas. On the shows in the arena, for example, or the treatment of slaves, his implicit belief in the equality and the brotherhood of man, despite all barriers of race or class or rank, was one resurrected from the days of the early Stoics, which led directly to great improvements in the legal position of slaves. The belief was also the germ of the notion of natural law, the law which was thought to transcend national boundaries and form a basis of the validity of international law. These elements of Stoicism made their not-so-small or indirect contributions to the French and American revolutions. Retiring from public life, he devoted his last year to his philosophy, writing, and in particular, the Letters from a Stoic. In AD 65, following the discovery of a plot against the emperor, which might have resulted in Seneca's elevation to the throne, he and many others were compelled by Nero to commit suicide. His name as an essayist and dramatist has recently returned to prominence following two or three centuries of literary oblivion. Of the 124 letters to Lucilius, some 40 are translated in the book Letters from a Stoic.